Today we begin a two-part decode of the conspiracy classic film called Under the Silver Lake. In part one, we're going to introduce the cast and get right into the film breakdown as we follow Sam into the coded coffee shop, then his Discordian number 23 apartment, and on to his journey to find the hidden codes in Los Angeles from Janet Gaynor, Seventh Heaven, Morley's, Sevenths of Babylon, Dog Killers, Trafficking Zines, Jesus and the Brides of Dracula from Draco, Ouroboros, Succubus, Owl's Kisses, going underground and into caves, portals, and hidden tunnels beneath L.A., Balloon Girl symbolism, the crazy time traveler meaning of the song by R.E.M., What's the Frequency, Kenneth, Sex Magic, Homeless King, and Sam's Blindfolded Initiation. And throughout both parts of our analysis, we're going to discuss some of the Epstein file findings that connect into this movie. We're talking about the eating of other people. We're talking about the Frizzle Frazzle Dizzle. We're talking about the Hall of Faces, Life Masks, Sunnyland, Illinois, pizzas that you find at the gates, and elites doing what they do. I'll also, of course, discuss several Twin Peaks parallels, as to be expected. So join me here on Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture with your host, Isaac Weishaupt. Now, quick plug, if you're listening to the audio version of this on the podcast apps, you're going to want to watch the YouTube version of this, okay? Be sure to watch it. You can listen to it, of course, now and then go watch later. But I'm going to put the images of what I'm talking about on the YouTube version at Occult Symbolism. Help me get to 100,000 subscribers by the end of the year or I'll quit forever. This is like in wrestling. I'm going to have a retirement match. So if you want to help me, you want to get to 100K by December 31st, 2026, go subscribe to the YouTube. Links are always in the show notes. And I'm going to try to get to I'm of course, not going to retire. I'm joking. Just like wrestling, it's a hoax to get you to go do it. And if you already subscribed, thank you for listening to my nonsense. You probably got a few more months of my nonsense. Hell, maybe till December. We'll see when we hit the goal. But I'm going to try to get the video version that I make of the show on there with the clips from the movie in fair use, of course, intact, so that when I discuss the clips, you can watch the clip. Now, YouTube has a history of bullying me. And they will probably hit me with copyright strikes, and you probably won't see the video on YouTube that has the clips intact. If you want the clips intact, you can do that on my Tier 2 supporter feeds, patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher or IlluminatiWatcher.com in the VIP section. And check the there's a promo code you can get in VIP section for free. MK Ultra expires February 28th. Read about it in the show notes so you don't have to listen to me cry about it. But yeah, that's the deal, all right? You should watch it on the YouTube because you'll get the images and the videos. But if you're an old schooler like me who just usually listens to podcasts the way God intended it, then hey, you know, it is what it is. So as I always do with my film analysis, we'll start with, should you watch this movie before you listen to my analysis? I would say yes, right? Because I'm going to spoil everything, of course. I'm going to give you my interpretation of it. But this is one of those films that has subjective ideas that people are presenting their theories online, all over Reddit and so on. Now, as far as it being a good movie, I think it's good. It's not my favorite. I've had some ups and downs on it because I'm an impatient guy, right? Because it's long, right? And that's the other part of my pre-ramble for any film I do. How long is this movie? It's almost 2.5 hours, and that's where it gets into trouble with a guy like me. That's too long. That's too long of a movie. Cut an hour out of it. Make it a two-part movie. I don't care. Just, it's too much.
All right.
No, I know it's a pure irony that the guy who has Stanley Kubrick tattooed on his arm and watches Twin Peaks says that a movie's too long. Because, I mean, I don't think Kubrick makes a movie less than 2.5 hours. But you know what? It works for him. And only him. And Lynch. So, but no, it's a good movie. I liked the movie. I thought it was entertaining. I would recommend you watch it. Is it my top 10 movie? Absolutely not. It's just too long. I feel like they could have increased the speed of some of the scenes or maybe added music to make it more intrigue, but it has this cool noir vibe. I like it. I think it's a good movie, period. Now, but if you're like, dude, I don't care, I'm not watching it, then by all means, let's keep going. Who's in the movie? Andrew Garfield. He plays a guy named Sam. That's the protagonist of the movie. Andrew Garfield was Spider-Man. He was in the Mormon crime drama Under the Banner of Heaven. He was also in the Heath Ledger movie, Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, and the shape-shifting lizard person Mark Zuckerberg movie, Social Network. Now, what's interesting is that Sam, the character in this movie, Under the Silver Lake, is 33 years old, which of course was obviously done there on purpose because this whole movie is fodder for conspiracy stuff, right? But what's interesting is that Andrew Garfield himself was 33 when the filming of this movie started. Now, why does any of that matter? Well, the director did all this on purpose, I believe. So let's unpack that a little bit. I mean, we're not even getting into the movie. We're already unpacking stuff. That should tell you how, why I've got to do this film analysis in two parts. Because it's so much. All right. The short version, the number 33 is the top stage of enlightenment for one to become a god, which you're going to find out when we get into the conclusion in part two, when I break down what exactly is happening in this movie, why that matters. So back pocket that for now. And as usual, Scottish Rite of Freemasonry has 33 degrees. The 33rd is the highest, invitation only. It represents the initiate that has perfected and obtained the hidden knowledge and wisdom, the Sophia, the Gnosis. A play on Christianity, Christ had 33 years in service before he was resurrected. In Kabbalah, the Star of David represents 33. It's two three-sided triangles, right? And the name of Elohim or God appears 33 times in Genesis. And what's interesting is that, again, we're going to talk about the ascension texts of Egyptian Book of the Dead in the conclusion of part two, Jacob's Ladder, which is also a play on the ascension mythologies. Jacob's Ladder is the part of connecting earth to heaven in the Hermetic Law of Correspondence, as above, so below. Massive topic. It's the stairway to heaven, okay? Peter Levenda talks about this several times in The Dark Lord, as well as this book I've got right here, Stairway to Heaven. It's literally the title of the book, which I'm going to tell you why all that matters in part two. Because Set resides in the Great Bear constellation, the thigh of the bull, right? What does all this mean? It means strong like bull, right? We're talking wieners and we're talking sex magic, you know? Kenneth Grant associates the Great Bear with Babylon, the guardian goddess of the Mauve Zone, aka the seven stars, which are alien intelligence. And if you reach Babylon, your ego is fully annihilated, right? It's one step beyond the orgasmic experience is annihilation, right? It's very extreme. It's the price you pay is sacrifice in order for Babylon to use you as a tool to transmit alien consciousness into the world, to create some kind of transhuman entity, AI channeling, whatever. I don't know. And of course, there's 33 vertebrae on the spine. This is the ascent. Again, as above, so below. You have Jacob's Ladder in the as above, the macrocosm. But on the microcosm in the body, you're ascending to the pineal gland, unlocking the third eye, achieving the wisdom, the kundalini energy, right? Making the similar journey, unlocking the chakras. And occultists will say that this was Christ's journey, and that's what the Bible is really all about. That's the hidden Kabbalistic meaning of the Bible, right? With the kundalini serpent reaching Golgotha, the place of the skull, right? The brow chakra, the pineal gland, the third eye awakening and opening. And all this, of course, goes into the occult, deep into the occult stuff, right? Kenneth Grant thought initiates could try and get to Babylon and fully dissolve and sort of vanish from the world and into her, become sort of an ascended master, as I would believe is what they're trying to say. But he said that it's through the surreal arts that we can find a way to call upon her, to call upon Babylon, to carry her Typhonian current into the world and channel these aliens, channel these entities. So in a way, a lot of the surrealism of these films mess with your head, right? David Lynch, Stanley Kubrick, they were perfect at this. In a way, you could receive some bit of this transmission because all artwork is in some way ritualistic. I don't know. Anyway, kind of crazy stuff. Back to Andrew Garfield. Wikipedia. And I'm going to explain all that in much better. Well, I don't know about better, but I'm going to try to explain that in part two in the conclusion. So be sure to stay subscribed and all the stuff. All right. Wikipedia describes Andrew Garfield's religion as, and I quote, "Garfield has referred to himself as an agnostic pantheist, although he identifies as Jewish. Having completed the spiritual exercises of Ignatius of Loyola after playing a Jesuit in silence, he said that what was really easy was falling in love with this person, was falling in love with Jesus Christ. That was the most surprising thing." That is surprising. Uh-huh. And I don't think I need to explain to you the history of those two particular faiths to tell you why that would be surprising for someone of one faith to fall in love with the savior of the other faith, okay? Now, he's got hot takes on capitalism. He says, money is the thing that has corrupted all of us and led to the terrible ecological collapse that we are all about to die under. We've been taught that the only way to have worldly success is by trampling on each other. It's not soul first. It's survival first at any cost. I like that. I like that. All right. This guy seems all right. He seems all right. He also acknowledges that there is symbolism in Under the Silver Lake. He said, Garfield described the film as a code within a code within a code. And I'm going to take you to that third level of code. You know, you'll go on Reddit and they'll be cracking the cipher of, oh, what do the Barbie doll symbols mean and what's on the wall? And it's like, okay, that's one level, right? That's what they want you to think about when they show you this. But in reality, we're going three levels deep to what the elites practice and what they believe. But he's always fascinated with hidden structures and elite networks that influence our lives. So he seems like the perfect guy for this role, and I believe he is. A couple other characters to talk about. A girl named Sarah is played by Riley Keough. You know, Nepo baby alert. Elvis is her grandfather, right? And she owns Graceland now that Lisa Marie, her mother, died. And Lisa Marie met her father, Danny Keough, at the Somethingtology Celebrity Center, right? Because that's, she was raised in that. But as of 2023, she just says she is now spiritual. Lisa Marie and Danny divorced when Riley was five, and Riley acknowledges that she grew up privileged on her mother's side, but her father lived in apartments and trailer parks, so she feels like she got exposure on both sides of living, all right? Now, funny enough, Lisa Marie, she would go on to marry Nick Cage when Riley was just 13. So for 107 glorious days, Nick Cage was her father, her stepfather. But then, in true Nick Cage fashion, they got divorced immediately. Her brother, Benjamin Keough, died at his own hands at the age of 27. You know, possible links to the 27 Club, right? And you also know that she was in other great movies like Mad Max Fury Road, The House That Jack Built, Magic Mike, Daisy Jones and the Six, and so on. All right. Also know that a small piece of me dies from the cringe of me not being able to say certain words, but hey, that's the world we live in. I'm trying to rebuild on YouTube. I'm very sorry for the people that don't like that. I don't like it either. I like it less than you. And I know that in the conspiracy world, people are like, oh, self-censorship, you're a cuck. Okay, it is what it is, man. I don't know what to tell you. Like, this is how you grow a show is on YouTube. It's kind of where everybody is. So it is what it is. Topher Grace from, what's that show? That 70s show? He plays Sam's friend in the movie. No name given at all in the movie. We know Topher. We love Topher. He's the only one in that 70s shows that turned out not to be creepy. Ironically, in this film, he's a little creepy. and funny enough, at the end of part two, we're going to discuss Ashton Kutcher because he comes up in all this mess. Sydney Sweeney, she's barely in this too, playing an escort, no less. But hey, you know, don't get too excited, fellas. It's a very short bit part. Patrick Fischler plays the author of a zine, a hardcore conspiracy theorist. You may know him from such shows as Twin Peaks The Return. He played Duncan Todd. He was also in Mulholland Drive. Now, the director, David Robert Mitchell, he hasn't done a ton of stuff, seems to be relatively quiet. He did a very popular film called It Follows, which I would rank as one of the most overrated horror films of all time. It's fine. It's not a bad movie. I don't like it. It's just, I don't know. It doesn't do anything for me. Same with Everyone Loves Trick or Treat. Again, overrated. These are the most overrated horror movies of all time. And he did It Follows based on a recurring nightmare he was having of a shape-shifting entity that only he could see, which tells me that maybe that's why he's into this conspiracy stuff, right? He didn't do a whole lot of movies, though, right? In 2010, he did a movie called The Myth of the American Sleepover. 2014, he does It Follows. 2018, he does Under the Silver Lake, and that is it. He's apparently working on a sequel to It Follows called They Follow. I'm not watching it. And he's working on a movie called Flower Veil Street. Now, ironically, for no ass reason, I like this guy. I think he seems genuine, and obviously he's into conspiracy, so, you know, he's in the brotherhood. Now, also, before we get into this, here's my approach to the movie, right? The first time I watched this movie, I saw so much going on, and I had so many requests to watch this movie, right? So the first time watching it, I already knew, all right, I'm going to have to take notes. So I took notes on the first watch, and I typically don't do that. I typically watch a movie to enjoy it or sort of get my bearings, and then I watch it a second time. So we're going to go through my notes of what I saw. Then I'm going to do a little bit of a partial decode as we go through it. And then in the conclusion of part two, we're going to unpack some of the deeper theories that I have about what's going on in this movie, as well as some discussion of what other people are saying on Reddit and such, right? Because lots of people have done a lot of homework on this movie, and there's surely things that I'm not going to discuss on here. I started out with the intention of this is my analysis. I'm watching it, taking my notes, and I'm going to present it as such. And at the end of my theories and my ideas, I'm going to do, because it's not an ego thing. It's because like this is what keeps me engaged in this realm, because it's exciting for me and I enjoy doing this kind of stuff. I don't get anything by, oh, let me read someone else's research and then regurgitate it. I get zero out of that. That's not fun for me. So, but I realize that a lot of people have done a lot of research on this. So I will address some of the interesting ideas I have stumbled across at the very, very end after we go through all of my great ideas and theories. Okay. So let me walk you through the movie. I'll explain the symbolism. And hopefully I can add something unique to this situation. I didn't read all the theories out there. I took a small amount of time to sort of dig through what other people were seeing. So hopefully what I'm about to tell you is unique and different and a new spin or take on the movie, right? Yeah. And also, I got a quick plug before we get into the show. We're live from the Mushroominati Watcher Coffee Studios. That's right. I'm making my own mushroom-infused coffee. And, I'm not making it, but my man Jordan over at Wind & Sea Coffee is the guy supplying and roasting the Mushroominati Watcher Coffee. All right? It's the best mushroom-infused coffee on the planet. I assure you of that. Go get it at occultsymbolism.com. I've actually added I've adjusted the shipping cost, and now you can get up to 3 bags for $4.99 because it's an expensive product, all right? And I want to try to like make it work for you guys. So, and the 10% off discount codes for Patreon and VIP section that I give you guys, I can't apply to the coffee. That's how narrow my profit margins all are. I'm doing this because, A, I truly love the product, and I'd rather shill you my product that I love and I know and I trust and stand behind. And this is a two-veteran business-owned thing. Me and Jordan, both military vets, so it's two small businesses, two veteran-owned businesses, and it's my product, so I stand behind it. It's delicious. So go check it out if you want to support the show, occultsymbolism.com. Okay, plot spoilers coming. Without further ado, let's get into the movie. Starts out, and immediately, right off the rip, you know you're in for some symbolism. There's 4 images that flash by. You got a unicorn, a tiger, a serpent, and a lion in these circles, right? I don't know what this means. Obviously, you could unpack Manly P. Hall's secret teachings of all ages, because he talks about every kind of animal there is in the zodiac, you know, with Leo and whatever, right? You actually see shirts throughout the movie that have similar imagery of animals and circles on the shirts, okay? And like I said, some of the stuff I'm going to decode as we go, some of it is going to wait till the very end in the conclusion of part two. But yeah, you'll notice there's guys in line at the coffee shop with the same similar imagery, okay? And the year, I need to also set up the year. It's presumed to be sort of present day or the 2010s when it was technically filmed. As we'll talk about later, it's actually supposed to be the year 2011, maybe. So take that for what it's worth. But the point is, one key element you're going to find is that there's not a lot of emphasis on the technology of a smartphone. The iPhones they use in the movie are like iPhone 3s and 4s or something like that, right? So you introduce the protagonist, Sam, and he's standing in line at a coffee shop, and you'll notice a woman outside cleaning a window that someone has defaced with graffiti, and her shirt is a shirt of Jim Morrison, all right? You'll also notice on the telephone pole it says lost dog named Harry. Now, the dogs will play a recurring theme. We're going to talk about that, of course. On my Patreon chat, where all the Patreon folks are chatting, AP, she was on a burner. She was on a tear. She suggested that maybe these missing dogs equate to missing women that are trafficked, right? Connecting it into the story of Sasha Riley. This is our first Epstein connection. The story of Sasha Riley, which I deep dove into on Breaking Social Norms, my other podcast I do with my wife. We did a whole episode on all of the audio recordings of Sasha Riley and the whole story and trying to connect the dots on that. One of the aspects of it was the armed clown killing puppies, right? Killing dogs. Now, Jim Morrison, massive rabbit hole alert here, of course. Goes back to the creation of Laurel Canyon with the Doors of Perception and Aldous Huxley and his father, Admiral Morrison. Of course, the Gulf of Tonkin false flag that got us into the Vietnam War. And Jim Morrison also dies in the bathtub at the age of 27 in the 27 Club. I mean, he's just loaded down with all the stuff. All right. Now, you'll notice our main character, Sam, wearing a T-shirt from a video game called Jungle King from the 80s, because throughout the film, there's all this themes of nostalgia, pop culture. The characters are all respecting all this stuff, right? And you're also going to notice an LA Weekly in the scene. And on the cover, it's got Jesus and the Brides of Dracula. That's a band you're going to see throughout the film. Pay attention to the caption. It says East LA resurrected or never dead. Because like I'm going to talk about, there's Egyptian Book of the Dead resurrection mythology of the ascent rituals. That's the plot spoiler. That's where it goes. He gets his coffee. He sees a squirrel falling from a tree and dies right in front of him and looks at him as he's dying. And you're like, is Sam hallucinating? So he gets home and he lives in apartment number 23. And he sees he has a note that says he has 5 days to pay rent or get evicted. Heavy nod to Discordianism with the 23 and the 5. You got the law of fives. You got the 23 enigma. What are those things? The 23 enigma is the belief that the number 23 occurs in patterns and synchronicities. Came about when William S. Burroughs met a sea captain named Clark, who bragged about how he'd gone 23 years without an accident ever. That day he wrecks his ship and dies. Burroughs would later, on that same day, see news of an airplane crash of flight number 23. Then Robert Anton Wilson would write a series of books called the Illuminatus Trilogy, and he would say that 23 is connected to Discordianism, the Illuminati, etc. It's a cosmic pattern. It's the numerology of Kabbalah. It's a sacred number for the goddess of chaos, Eris. And furthermore, numerologically, it reduces from 23 to 2 plus 3, which equals 5, which takes us into the law of fives. That says everything happens in fives, right? That's from the Principia Discordia book, the Bible of this fake religion, this joke religion called Discordia, Discordianism. All things happen in fives, or are divisible by, or multiples of fives, or somehow directly or indirectly appropriated to five. Just like the 23 enigma, there's a bit of a confirmation bias when you start seeing everything in multiples of fives as a cosmic pattern, like the synchronicity moving us down this path. Now, the first run of the Principia Discordia book was done in 1965, and they had how many copies? 5 copies, right? And Kerry Thornley, one of the founders of Discordia, he had moved to Virginia and wanted the Pentagon to be the headquarters for Eris, and even attempted to get a P.O. box there. The Pentagon, also in the Epstein files, we found out that the government tried to sell the Pentagon real estate to Jeffrey Epstein. All right? So, Sam's mother, he gets into his apartment number 23, and his mother calls him to say, hey, there's this movie starring Janet Gaynor called Seventh Heaven from 1927. This is 27 again. And the movie is apparently about, because I've never seen it, it's about a woman meeting a guy who lets her live in his attic apartment on the 7th floor. So it's kind of about hidden structures, all right? And this movie was a big deal back in the silent movie era. It had won a bunch of Academy Awards. It made Janet Gaynor famous. And it's going to keep recurring throughout the film, 7th Heaven. So Sam, he's out on his patio. He's snooping on his neighbor, this old hippie woman with no no shirt. I say old. This hippie woman with no shirt on, and she's got these exotic birds dancing on her porch. And he's smoking cigarettes. He's smoking Morley's. These are cigarettes you find in the X-Files show, as well as a bunch of other shows and films in Hollywood. Breaking Bad, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Walking Dead. But all of them got this from Hitchcock's movie Psycho, which you'll see movie posters for Psycho in Sam's apartment. Now, Sam's just perving around. He's looking at this woman with no top through binoculars. He sees another young woman at the pool, right? And then there's a knock on his door. A woman shows up to his apartment with lunch, and she's wearing lederhosen for this movie role. And this is his friend. They proceed to get it on. He drops pipe, and they talk about this Kurt Cobain poster on his wall, because he's really into Kurt Cobain, right? Very into the pop culture stuff. Then on the TV, you get a news flash. A billionaire named Jefferson Sevens is missing. Now, that name Sevens, a play on the name Sevens, right? More numerology stuff, right? Sevens heaven. Seven is the number of perfection. It's the idea of the full enlightenment, right? Attaining the hidden wisdom. The number of Babylon, the divine feminine. That's why you see the Sigil of Babylon has the sevens on it. But ultimately, it's the Sam being led down this path towards enlightenment, towards the hidden knowledge. That's what the movie's all about. She picks up a Playboy. He says, that's the first one I ever played with myself to. And the cover article references The Dolls Beyond the Valley of the Dolls and a Joan Baez interview. Because if you track this down, the actual issue being used is a July 1970 Playboy. Again, an homage to The Shining and Stanley Kubrick, who did the same thing with Jack Nicholson's character, right? Jack Torrance, he's in the waiting room, and he picks up a Playboy that talks about, you know, stuff that's relevant to that movie. So he picks it up, and you'll notice, if you dig into what this actual issue was about, the cover image is of a Playboy model named Carol Willis. This was her first modeling work. And then she dies in a car crash in 71 at the age of 22 in Laguna Beach. Now, take note to her pose in the water on the cover. You'll notice she's inverted. This will come up later, all right? Also on the cover, Joan Baez. She was a famous folk artist who had teamed up with Bob Dylan. And Beyond the Valley of the Dolls was a 1970 film that was supposed to be the sequel to the Valley of the Dolls film, but ended up becoming a parody of it. Valley of the Dolls, starring Sharon Tate, an actress. You know, she plays an actress trying to make it in Hollywood. And the casting for this film was like, it was nuts. I never seen the movie, but it also had Judy Garland from Wizard of Oz, which is, again, I did 4 or 5 episodes on Wizard of Oz symbolism. Natalie Wood, Mia Farrow, Candace Bergen. I mean, this stuff just connects into all the aspects of Hollywood, right? With Charles Manson and Rosemary's Baby, you know. Anyway, so Sam, he's got some scribbled notes, and she's rifling through these notes, but he grabs them from her, so they must be important, like a little secret, okay? Next thing we know, he's driving around, you know, I don't know, Sunset Boulevard, whatever people talk about LA, and you'll notice that the camera zooms in on a building. It says Intelligentsia, like intelligence agencies. Turns out it's an actual coffee shop in LA, and he ends up going to a bookstore called The Last Bookstore, and it has all these little zines on it, right? Zines are these old, like, 90s prints that were really low budget, and they would just print them out. My friends over at the Blunt Letters podcast, they do the zines. It's really cool. It's, like, cool stuff. And the one he picks up is about a dog killer, right? Recall the film started with a woman scrubbing the message off the coffee shop that said, "Beware the dog killer." There's also another magazine or zine that we can't quite see. All we can see is it says the trafficking issue, sex and drug trafficking, responsible for 80% of something. Okay. I think that is possibly what's really going on beneath the surface of Hollywood and in this movie, as we're going to see, right? There's underlying context of people getting dosed, people paying workers for this kind of stuff, and so on. Epstein obviously blowing open the truth about how many people are really into this whole thing. Now, the Silver Lake community, according to the zines, has a curse. So he tells the guy working there to pass his phone number over to the guy who drops off these zines. And he's like, what's the author's name? No clue. Common theme in the movie. I don't know that anyone says anyone's name at any point in this movie. You could see them on captions a little bit, but it could be related to the idea of the magical power imbued in the spoken word and the name. That's why people choose magical names. Not ultra relevant to any of the theories I'm going to come up with, but it is something of note. So he finally meets this blonde that he was looking at the pool earlier, and she's got the dog that he keeps watching, and they get to chatting. Dog's name is Coca-Cola because everything has some nostalgia pop culture reference or capitalism. We find out that Sam's dog died recently. Huh, that's interesting, isn't it? Because you keep seeing all this talk about a dog killer on the loose, and he doesn't say, oh yeah, the dog killer got my dog. We don't really hear much about it. That's interesting, Sam. So she invites him in. They get a little flirty. They start smoking up, right? Sam and Sarah, they're watching an old movie. And in her room, you'll see that there's dolls, Barbie dolls, with names Betty, Marilyn, and Lauren under each doll. Then under each doll's name, there's these random glyphs. It's a cipher that we're going to unpack later at the end of part two. Weirder yet, they are the same women on the movie that they're currently watching. It's a movie called How to Marry a Millionaire because she's got that exact poster on her wall. She's apparently obsessed with this the way Sam's mother is obsessed with Seventh Heaven. And the Barbies, of course, are Marilyn Monroe, Betty Grable, and Lauren Bacall, who all starred in this movie, which seems important, right? Again, haven't seen it, but it says it's a 1953 rom-com directed by Jean Negulesco, who also did a 1953 film called Titanic, which would later get remade with the world's greatest actor, as you already know, in the 90s. I remember when the movie came out, me and my girlfriend at the time tried to get tickets. You couldn't get tickets to see Titanic for weeks, right? It was a big deal. This is before you could buy them online. You had to show up and missed it. Now, fun fact, Nicole Kidman bought the rights to this movie in 2007, How to Marry a Millionaire. So a remake of that movie also is possible by Nicole Kidman, of all people, right? She was in The Stepford Moms, Eyes Wide Shut. Her dad is tied into MK Ultra, as we discussed on that series. Oh, my goodness. Point is, Titanic is another movie that this guy directed. And again, big old conspiracy, right? Big old rabbit hole warning. Because it's alleged that there's a connection to the Federal Reserve. J.P. Morgan, supposedly opposed to the Federal Reserve. He owned the White Star Line that operated the Titanic. And he canceled his trip at the last minute. Isn't that interesting? Just like, what's that guy that didn't show up? Howard Lutnick, our Secretary of Commerce, didn't show up to 9/11 on that day to the World Trade Center where he worked. Canceled it at the last minute to take his kid to daycare or something. That's interesting. Now, I've read several theories about the Titanic that appear to be debunked. It's hard to know anymore because how do you trust history between all these dark enlightenment figures that own the internet and books and history and media? I don't even know what's real anymore. But supposedly J.P. Morgan was the guy who had advocated for a Fed system, but then was leery about the federal government running it. Another theory is that J.P. Morgan sank his own ship for insurance money. You know, but I don't know. I put nothing off limits for billionaires. They appear to have no soul. I believe that firmly. I think they're shape-shifting lizard people. Some famous wealthy people actually did die on the Titanic, which adds to some of the lore, right? John Jacob Astor IV, one of the richest people in the entire world, right? That's like Elon Musk dying, you know, God forbid. A tragedy, no doubt. Benjamin Guggenheim, Isidore Strauss, who owned Macy's, right? If you've seen the 90s movie Titanic, there's an old couple in bed that tragically dies romantically sort of together. That's this guy, Isidore and Ida Strauss. Anyway, back to the movie. Old girl's got these Coke cans by her TV, just like her dog's name. She's into Coca-Cola. Notice the wall art. You've got a heart and a butterfly, right? Very symbolic of the MK Ultra symbolism that we talked about in that four-part series. So they call it a night. They go out front and they see some fireworks going off. And Sam comments, how strange it is. He's like, wow, it's really late in the summer for that, right? Like, this must be after July 4th. She seems disturbed by it. And I believe that this is a trigger for events that happen later. That's why she seems so taken aback by this. So they split up. He goes towards his Mustang and someone keys a giant schlong on the hood. And he sees who did it. It's these young boys down the street. I mean, they're barely teenagers. And he catches up with them and beats the crap out of them. And, you know, I don't actually blame him for this. If someone carved a giant hog on my S2000, they're getting bodied. All right. I don't care. So you don't mess with another man's car. So, but he does proceed to beat up children because he's kind of crazy. He's kind of unhinged, as you see throughout the movie. So he opens up that zine again, and it says that Silver Lake in the east side of L.A. was built around the silent film studios, and it was a place known as Edendale, right? It was where films were made before Hollywood became a thing. So it was like Hollywood before Hollywood, right? It was also a very radical, bohemian, hippie, anarchist vibes there. And the story is that in 1978, there was this aspiring actor who found a film in the basement of a man holding a sign that said, no one will ever be happy here until all the dogs are dead. Then holds the piece to his dome and pulls the trigger. Because he was apparently jealous of Hollywood's working dogs because they were able to find roles easier than he was. And this film was found in a house used to train stunt dogs for Max Sennett shorts. And it says the secrets are buried under the Silver Lake. Now, we're going to unpack all of this in the conclusion. This is the classic symbol of initiation and the portal, right? You're going through the water. You're going underground. It's about a character facing their own shadow and the own subconscious. When you get into the realms of going under or into the water, it's about the subliminal subconscious mind. Carl Jung stuff. Now, Max Sennett was a real guy. And he did start the comedy genre in the silent film era of Edendale. And he's the one that launched Fatty Arbuckle and Charlie Chaplin and so on. So another famous character. All discussed in Kenneth Anger's Hollywood Babylon that exposes the dark side of some of these famous actors in the golden age of Hollywood, right? So Sam, he's asleep now. He has a dream where he follows this trail of milk bones and finds a dead dog. And a man who he thought was Sarah, because he's dressed up like Sarah. What's Sarah doing? She's eating some other man's entrails. Now, didn't the Epstein files talk about this kind of thing? I think it did. I think file number EFTA01246049 had an FBI report on a guy who made some claims that was almost entirely redacted, but you can read that his family were members of the redacted, I would argue, a cult, and that he was SA'd at the age of four by his great uncle with the name redacted while Epstein watched. Then he remembered being on a yacht at the age of eight and getting a strange medical exam, which resulted in yet another SA incident, this time with Epstein and Clinton, Bill Clinton. And he saw males engaging in acts with females and all this sort of like red liquid all over the place and babies having their insides, you know, the thing that we see in the movie, right? Eating this stuff. And other, I mean, this sounds outlandish though, right? Other people included these events, George H.W. Bush, Henry Kissinger, and George Soros. And the FBI asks for evidence or witnesses, but he didn't have any. But he did say his uncle had several of these films of people being taken out. So, is this file true? No idea. There's a lot of outlandish stories that just so happen to all be the same story. So if you ask my personal opinion, I believe it. Right? Call me crazy. Call me black pill. I see too many. I mean, if they didn't try to cover these things up so much, if they didn't, you know, they say that we've only got half the files. I saw another analysis that said we've only got 2% of the files. When you look at it from a terabytes perspective, we definitely don't have videos. We definitely, even the stuff we have is all redacted. You can't even see who's talking to who, right? We got all these weird emails. We're talking about eating beef jerky, and Epstein had a personal chef that ran a restaurant called The Cannibal. Okay. Now, when we're talking about this character eating the entrails, this could be based off of occult stuff too. Soothsayers used to divinate based on the entrails of goats or sheep or oxen because they believed in that hermetic law of correspondence, as above, so below, which means the universe and the future is encoded in the below. All right? Is it possible that Epstein and these weirdos believe in all these occult ideas? I don't think that's so preposterous. I talked about this in my second book back in 2014, Sacrifice Magic Behind the Mic. This whole idea. Anyway, Sam goes to Sarah's apartment and finds out that they moved out. So now he's tripping. And again, that theory I have, the fireworks were a signal for her to move to whatever she's about to go do. Right? So naturally, he breaks in. The apartment's basically vacant. He finds a shoebox with a, you know, back massager. He gives it a little sniff, as one does, and he sees her. He sees her Barbies in it, a trophy, some fruit stripes gum, and then one of her girlfriends walks in. So he hides out. She grabs the shoebox and then leaves with it. And before he leaves, he stares at the symbol on the wall. It's kind of a sideways eight. All right, this is very Twin Peaks-esque. Ironically, in The Return, you see this symbol with one of the characters. I don't want to plot spoil in case you're still catching up with me on Twin Peaks. But Twin Peaks, The Return came after this film, right? I think that's how it worked. Anyway, either way, it doesn't really matter. Ouroboros is the encoded symbol here, right? It's the dragon eating its own tail, which means it's talking about the endless cycle of life, death, rebirth. It's the unified construct of opposing forces. It's order and chaos all in one image, and it's balanced out. In terms of alchemy, it's the self-transformation, a trigger for Sam's evolution or enlightenment, right? And I would propose, because Carl Jung said it was the self-devouring ego with the unconscious, creating the conscious reality, aka the symbol for individuation or becoming whole and incorporating one's own shadow, which Sam surely has. I mean, he's beating up children. All right. So he follows this girl who grabbed the box, and she hops into what appears to be a mint 1984 Volkswagen Cabriolet. I don't know how they found a clean 84 VW Cabrio. I used to have an 84 A1 Rabbit GTI, so like I was kind of nerding out on that. I was like, oh, okay, that's pretty cool. But also notice the symbolic purpose of this classic car. It's a white rabbit. He is following the white rabbit. This is the path of the initiate. This is Neo in the Matrix. This is Alice in Wonderland, following the white rabbit to enlightenment, which, plot spoiler, he ends up going underground, just like Alice in Wonderland. So the mystery girls, they get out of this Volkswagen. They point to a scoreboard at Mike Haynes Stadium at Boyd Field, and it flashes the number 751. So Sam writes that down on the back of a check, which he also drew that Ouroboros symbol. Now, and I think this field is named after the Raiders cornerback, Mike Haynes, who was an L.A. Raider when they were in L.A. So he follows them across a lake, and they hand this shoebox off to some guy who's dressed up as a pirate who is friends with Sarah and these girls, all right? He then follows them across town to a rooftop club where the Jesus and the Dracula, Brides of Dracula, are playing a song called Turning Teeth, a very popular song in L.A. at the time of this, in the storyline. It was on all the flyers in the magazine cover, right? Jesus and the Brides of Dracula. Very hot LA band. Now, Dracula, again, a hot occult topic because of the Draco constellation, right? As well as the drinking of the body fluids, as we talked about earlier. Now, David Icke incorporates the Draco constellation into his theory about the draconian shape-shifting lizard people. And that's his explanation for why these elites like Epstein in these files that are coated with beef jerky, Doc, are doing these unspeakable acts, right? It's because these hybrids of entities who feed off of human emotions, bad ones, fear, is where they come from. It comes from Draco. Draco meaning the dragon. The Ouroboros, ironically, also symbolized as a dragon. Now, strangely enough, Kenneth Grant, one of these old school occult magicians working with Crowley, also into Draco. He thinks Draco is the cosmic gateway into Typhon or Set and the dark side of the Kabbalistic tree of life. He apparently elaborates on this in Night Side of Eden. I don't have that book. I have not read it. But that's what it seems to say in my research of Grant. And it's always, the point is, to zoom out on all this nonsense, it's always about these occultist opening gateways, trying to let entities through to influence our reality and how it makes us all a little crazy, just like Sam is being a little crazy, all right? So he sneaks up on the girls. They're named Fanny and May, like Fanny May, and asks one of them if she knows Sarah. She spits in his face and knees him in the balls. Now, it's curious because he's on the ground and some other women come in because it's the women's bathroom, right? And he's on the ground clutching his nuts and the women are like, you need to get out of here, perv. And they start barking at him like dogs. And maybe that's the clue that the women are the dogs in this analogy, like someone is killing women. Sam sees a friend named Alan, right? And they see the daughter of the seventh billionaire, the billionaire that's missing. And the daughter is at this party. And they find out on a newsflash that Jefferson Sevens was found, only he's dead. And his burned up body, someone tells the daughter and she dips, right? So Sam is walking home. And the guy who drew up the zine calls him back and invites Sam over to his house. And Sam thinks he sees someone following him. So he drops his little, you know, six pack of beers and runs for his apartment. A skunk sprays him down. He goes inside. He turns on the news and they're still talking about Jefferson Sevens and how he was burnt to death in this car with three prostitutes, along with the remains of the Bishan Freeze dog, another dead dog. That's Sarah's dog. Okay. Sam zooms in and sees the hat that Sarah was wearing. So basically, Sarah's dead. She was with this billionaire, and the news says that she was a working girl. So, anyway, Sam, he gets sprayed with a skunk, so he takes his clothes off. He got this party that says, or he got this cookie at a party that says 76, right? It's for the after party. And you got that 6-7 thing for you nerds out there. I did a show on that too, by the way. It goes back to Santeria, this whole 6-7 thing. Because what's the rapper's name? Skrilla. He channeled this through, he's doing blood sacrifices to his gods, and he channeled this 6-7 symbol and this meme, and now everyone does it. It's all about aliens, okay? Next morning, Sam, he's with the same girl that had the Lederhosen. She's a nurse, and he's in the bathtub trying to get the skunk juice off of him, and she's reading the zine about the Owl's Kiss. All right.
Who is the Owl's Kiss? The Owl's Kiss is a lost legend of folklore, just as terrifying as the Wolfman or Frankenstein's monster. She is a woman who arrives in the night through windows and locked doors, naked except for her mask of taxidermied owl skin. She seduces men and women alike, killing them in their sleep. This beautiful specter is responsible for dozens of deaths within the Los Angeles basin, though she has yet to be mentioned by mainstream media. Theories abound as to her motives. This author believes she may be a member of a long-standing American cult with origins in trade and finance. It is the unlucky soul who finds himself the recipient of an owl's kiss. What a bunch of horse. I can't believe Jefferson Sevens is dead. It seems like every year more and more celebrities and people I grew up with keep dying. Dick Clark, Elizabeth Taylor, Johnny Carson.
Everybody dies. Even those people we think are gonna be here forever.
What were those pages on your nightstand? The ones with all the scribbles?
No, there's nothing.
No, tell me, I wanna know.
Well, have you ever heard about old record albums having satanic messages in them if you play them backwards?
Sure.
Well, I was watching Wheel of Fortune, and I noticed that Vanna White did this little pattern of glances every so often. She would look straight ahead, to the right, to the left, and then back again. I started to wonder, is that random? Is there a reason, like a pattern behind it? And if there is, maybe there's something meaningful in that pattern. So yeah, I just started taking note of when it happened. Past 7 months, I got a complete record. I've just been thinking, why do we just assume that all of this infrastructure and entertainment and open information that is beaming all over the place, all the time, into every single home on the planet is exactly what we're told it is? Maybe there are people out there who are more important than us, more powerful and wealthier than us, that are communicating things and seeing things in the world that are meant for only them and not for us. I think it's ridiculous to assume that media has just one purpose, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you think that's weird?
A little.
Good. You don't ever think that maybe rich people know something that you and I don't?
Good restaurants, maybe. Look, don't take this the wrong way, but you smell so bad.
Yeah.
And I think I should get going.
Now, this is a legend, a folklore legend, if you will. And it's about a sexy woman wearing the skin of an owl on her face. What does that remind you of? It reminds you of Leatherface from Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but what else? What else in the Epstein files? It's that frizzle frazzle dizzle, all right? I can't say the words. It's the frizzle frazzle dizzle. You know what I'm talking about. But this woman, she seduces men and women in their sleep and kills them. So she's basically a succubus, all right? Now, the zine says that she may be a member of a cult with origins in trade and finance. Now, isn't that interesting? A cult of elites associated with goddess worship and owl goddesses, just like at Bohemian Grove, and trade and finance bros. What do you think everyone was doing with Epstein? Besides all that stuff, he had all this money. He knew all the connections. You'll also notice that on the bathroom floor, there's this pattern of hexagrams. This is Saturn symbolism. Now, she inquires about all the scribble that Sam has been doing in these pages, right? And he starts talking about satanic backmasking, and he says, look, I used to notice on Wheel of Fortune, Vanna White would look around in a certain pattern, so he started taking notes on when she would do it. And he goes deep into this conspiracy talk about symbolism hidden in plain sight, all right? And he says, you know, maybe entertainment by the elites is meant for them and not for us. She's, of course, very normie, not ready for any of this. But again, that's a major clue as to what's going on in this movie. So she's kind of bugging out because he's such a tinfoil hat kind of guy. And this is the natural response of the female to reject the tinfoil paranoid conspiracy male. All right. So that night he's outside and looking at the pool, and there's Sarah and she's naked. She starts barking like a dog again, with the women being the dogs, but then she disappears. And the whole idea is that he's having a delusion. Next day, his Mustang gets towed because he's not making payments, just like his rent, which, I mean, I swear he's got to have 2 days left before he's kicked out at this point. So he's walking it across town to the zine author, who the zine author was called him on the phone the night before. He's like, meet me at my house, 1492, right? The year Columbus sailed across the ocean blue. He stops at the house where they're having, before he goes to the zine house, he stops at another house where they're having a movie audition with all these models everywhere. And you'll notice there's all these signs up of beware the dog killer everywhere. They clearly juxtapose the young women with the dogs. He gets to the zine author's house, and the house is insane, as to be expected, right? You've got owl statues everywhere, again, Twin Peaks stuff. You've got faces mounted all over his walls. Wow. And a replica of what I presume is Columbus's Santa Maria boat, giving us the 1492 stuff. But now, isn't this very curious? We've seen this motif in pop culture before, all right? The faces on the wall. In Game of Thrones, you had the Hall of Faces. In Westworld, you had a similar with the Dr. Ford's office. And in December, we saw in one of the Epstein file dumps, there's this dentist chair room, and guess what's all over the wall? A bunch of faces, right? It's about suppression of the ego. Or if you want to go darker, it's the frizzle, frazzle, dizzle. Just like we see with the owl wearing the, you know. And you hear the faces on the wall are what he calls life masks, resin castings of famous faces for the film productions. And he says specifically, you've got Johnny Depp, Grace Kelly, Abraham Lincoln, Kim Kardashian, Raquel Welch. And of course, you see the owl statues all over the place under the life masks. Could it be that this guy is maybe the owl killer lady? I don't know. Just kidding. It's not. It's not. But there, again, crazy Epstein connections here that a lot of people picked up on, I'm sure. So Sam shows him the sideways eight symbol because he's like, look, I'm crazy too. And the zine author is like, that means stay quiet. It's a hobo guide of symbols that he gives him because these hobos apparently leave symbols everywhere telling other hobos like what's safe and what's not. Or unhoused people, I should say. Stay quiet, of course, being the message here. It's the vow of silence, the Harpocrates, you know? If Sam is being taken on this initiatory journey, he's being taken through the Freemasonic initiation with the vow of silence, which you're going to see later, too. He shows Sam this print of the missing dogs because he's been, like, saving them. And you know, virtually every dog name is like normal man and woman dogs. Like no one names their dog Harry. You know what I mean? And he says that there were missing signs for dogs, humans, and musical instruments. That's kind of crazy. But why was this symbol in Sarah's room? Let's focus here, right? The zine author thinks all those missing dog signs indicate something big is happening. And there's this cult of the whale that does sex and drug trafficking. And if you pause the screen, you'll see that there's this cult that worships the whale. They think it cures all these diseases. And you see another zine above it that again says sex and drug trafficking. This is a repeated message from earlier, right? It's also related to the owl's kiss, but Sam is skeptical of all this. So the author asks Sam for a dollar bill. And he points out the owl on the dollar bill and says, look, we're all subject to the owl's rules. This is the Bohemian Grove elite's thing, right? And he pulls out all these sexual innuendos embedded in corporate ads and logos. So Sam starts dropping his idea of messages that might be only for certain people, the elites, like the Vanna White thing. And of course, all this is conspiracy 101, going back to David Icke and Freeman Fly. They're the godfathers of this corporate symbolism stuff. So the zine author retrieves a cereal box that he had bought from a collector with a map on it that he believes is the key to all of this. All right, it's a box from 1977, and it's called the Space Stone Cereal. The map is guiding the author of the zine somewhere important, he thinks. Now, something curious about this, I looked up some of the info you can see on this box. You can see the city and the zip code listed on there, and it says you can mail the contest to get this map at to Sunland, Illinois, 06276. But that town doesn't exist. There's a Sunnyland, Illinois, but that zip code doesn't even exist in the United States at all. Turns out that zip code exists in a state called Sao Paulo, Brazil, a town called Osasco. Sao Paulo, Brazil, shows up in the Epstein files in EFTA 00705992, where Jess Staley, from the Barclays CEO guy, emails Epstein in February 2014 and says this: you want to know why we are not Sao Paulo? Watch the TV ads on the Super Bowl. It's all about hip blacks and hip cars with white women. The group that should be in the streets has been bought off by Jay-Z. And what they were referring to was Brazil at the time was hosting the World Cup and the population were mass protesting the government over the misuses and the mishandling of their money so they could host the World Cup. They didn't even want them. They were like, we want healthcare and infrastructure, not stadiums for soccer. And Jess Staley is like, yeah, Jay-Z's encoding the lyrics basically to brainwash the masses into not caring what the government does, which sure seems like that's what's happening today. And it just fits right into this theme of government control, pacifying the public with the bread and circus. So Sam stops by his friend's house, the Topher Grace guy. because we don't hear his name. You just know he's friends, and it's Topher Grace. Topher is flying his drone up to a woman's window so he can try to get a look at her taking her clothes off. Ironically, they're having a conversation about how all of our minds are connected and routed together with a alien mind hive via surveillance tools and the internet. And, you know, hey, we don't need to fear monsters and vampires anymore. While they're ironically the monsters in this, like filming this woman without her knowledge, right? And Topher says that our world is a cesspool of fear due to all of the surveillance that we are saturated in, while he's literally doing surveillance himself. Now, the woman, almost on cue, sits down and starts undressing, and they're watching on the drone camera, but then she starts crying, and Sam's like, I don't know about this. It's too much for him even, so he leaves. He heads to a movie that's playing at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery. This is where you see Sydney Sweeney, and she's in the movie, but she's watching it from the from Hitchcock's gravestone, by the way. Sydney Sweeney, another girl, and a guy, they all leave to get in a limo, and Sam's watching them, and he sees the pirate guys in the limo, the pirate guy that got the shoebox earlier. And that's all you get of Sydney Sweeney for the whole movie, for all you freaks and perverts, all right? So Sam heads to the Jesus Dracula Brides Dracula concert, where he goes to the door and he's got the cookie, the 7-6 cookie to get in. They say, take a bite of the cookie. He eats the whole damn thing. He gets in there. He sees his friend, who tells him that he heard Jesus and the Brides have a secret message in their music. Sam sees a woman that was dancing with the balloons at the first Jesus concert. And he's like, hey, do you know Sarah? Or did you know Sarah, I guess, because since she's dead now, right? She takes him down to the basement at a place called the Crypt Club, right? She takes him underground to give him the secret info. And by the way, I was curious if the Crypt Club was a real place. Turns out it was set up to look like that. It's actually the Bronson Caves, which was an old tunneling system they used for a quarry in the 1900s. And they used this in tons of movies like the Batman 60s series, apparently. Anyhow, Balloon Girl, again, no name, says she's seen Sarah, but doesn't know what happened to her. Meanwhile, the club plays What's the Frequency, Kenneth by REM, and Sam starts dancing with the Balloon Girl. Now, this song, of course, goated, and we're going to unpack what it means. Balloon Girl, that's her official credited name, by the way. The Balloon Girl is an archetype on his journey. She kind of looks like Frida, but she's holding red balloons all the time. Now, red balloons symbolize the loss of childhood innocence. We saw this with the Rihanna Anti album, which I decoded as a massive ritual, if you recall. On YouTube, you can watch that video, or if you want to read my Substack, IlluminatiWatcher.substack.com. Is that right? Yeah. Anyway, the balloon symbolizes dissociating, like how in Wizard of Oz, Dorothy goes over the rainbow in her hot air balloon. Okay. Now, REM, let's talk about What's the Frequency, Kenneth, because it was an interesting song, an interesting choice, because there's a whole time travel conspiracy about this song. I was completely unaware of this. I listened to this song in the 90s. I had no idea. So I'm going to share you what I found, too. And the story is this. It's 1986. Dan Rather, the news anchor, is minding his own business, walking around New York City, and he gets attacked by two men. One of them was named William Taggart, who keeps saying, Kenneth, what's the frequency? Now, it becomes a pop culture gem and gets referenced the next year when a band called Game Theory releases an album called Lolita Nation. We're not going to get into the side tangent on Kubrick and Epstein with that. But there was a track based on this event. So in 1993, Daniel Close writes a novel called Like a Velvet Glove Cast in Iron with the same phrase, and it's a plot about a conspiracy theorist. Now, the supposed urban legend that you can read on Reddit is that William Taggart, the guy who attacked Dan Rather, had a history of mental illness. And he once told a psychiatrist that he was a time traveler from the year 2265, and he's trying to find the frequency associated with his mission. And he thought Dan Rather was a man named Kenneth Burroughs from his time, who was the vice president. Michael Stipe writes this banger, and Wikipedia claims it's actually about a guy who's getting older and trying to understand the youth and their motivations. Okay. The Reddit post claims that Michael Stipe said this. It was the premier unsolved American surrealist act of the 20th century. It's a misunderstanding that was scarily random, media hyped, and just plain bizarre, which obviously makes more sense than Wikipedia's nonsense. Now, here's where it gets weird, because it hasn't gotten weird yet. REM's Monster, the album that this track was on, is recorded October 93, released September 94. August 31st, 94, you know, days before Monster is actually released, but well after the album was recorded, William Taggart goes to the NBC studios in New York City with a rifle, shoots and kills security guard Campbell Montgomery because he thought NBC was watching him and sending him signals. In 96, he gets sentenced to 15 to 25 years. Now, it's only after he got arrested that he confesses to the previous attack on Dan Rather, because the attackers were unknown up until this point. He gets to prison, tells psychiatrists his time traveler story about how he was a felon in 2265, and he's in this program to time travel in exchange for freedom, and he's got a chip in his brain, probably Elon Musk's Neuralink. And then it gets weirder, because it turns out Dan Rather, on the day he got attacked, was leaving Columbia University where a guy named Kenneth Schaefer, another Kenneth, had figured out how to hack into the Soviet Union television system. And that's why Dan Rather was there. He wanted to watch it. Kenneth Schaefer thinks he may have been the Kenneth William that this guy was after, because he had people watching and people would always ask, what's the frequency, Kenneth, that he was using to intercept these Soviet television signals? Because he wouldn't say, because he was an inventor. He's like, I'm going to cash in on this. So the story ends. In 2010, William gets released from prison at the age of 63. And that's about it. Weird story, though, right? And of course, it would appear in this movie that's just chock full of conspiracy stuff. So back to the scene. Balloon Girl wants to get it on, but Sam starts bugging out. Turns out that cookie he used for admission was laced with something and he shouldn't have eaten the whole thing. So he gets dosed. Again, another common theme you find in all of this stuff, you know, from Bill Cosby and Epstein and all these people, right? So he throws up in the toilet. There's a code on the wall and a phallus on the other. What is up with all the phalluses everywhere? My goodness, they're talking about wanking it to the Playboy. There's a phallus on his Mustang. There's a phallus on the wall. Oh, it's almost like there's a cult that's into this kind of stuff. So he gets out of the bathroom. Balloon Girl's nowhere to be found. He sees another girl that hung out in this VW Cabrio. He chases her into the cemetery and he passes out. Next morning, he wakes up. His mom calls him saying, hey, I'm mailing you a VHS tape of that Janet Gaynor movie from earlier, Seventh Heaven. And mom says she feels connected to Janet Gaynor. Sam wakes up, looks around. Turns out he passed out at Janet Gaynor's headstone. So he heads back to Topher's house. And Sam says, like, look, when I was a child, I thought I could find secret messages in everything. Now, Topher says something pretty prophetic and insightful here.
Hey, man, you really think you're going to find a hidden message in a pop song?
I don't know. I just remember being in my room when I was like 10 and coming up with all these weird little codes and secret languages.
It's an entire generation of men obsessed with video games, secret codes, space aliens. Used to be 100 years ago, you know, any moron could kind of wander into the woods and look behind a rock or some shit and discover some cool new thing, you know. Not anymore. Where's the mystery that makes everything worthwhile? We crave mystery because there's none left.
About how there's a whole generation of men who grew up with video games and they're trying to solve whatever mystery is possibly left in life, like a cheat code in a video game, right? Meanwhile, Sam is literally reading a book called The Code Breakers about cryptography and stuff, right? And Sam, what he's trying to do is decode and backmask the Jesus and the Brides of Dracula music, the Turning Teeth song. He ends up playing with himself to the Playboy again. And he's looking around for inspiration to get this job done. And this reminded me of Sex Magik, right? Because that's kind of the idea that that's what Jack Parsons is doing in stage one of the Babylon working ritual with L. Ron Hubbard watching him in the desert. Also notice, like, this film doesn't even use the internet, basically. And he's got all these women, like Sarah and the billionaire's daughter, and then all these, like, photos around, right? If he was just trying to complete the mission, he could have just went online, but, like, that wasn't really a thing, right? Anyway, he gets inspired. He sees this Shooting Star Escorts ad. It's Sydney Sweeney and the other actress from the movie that he saw watching in the cemetery. So he calls up, orders up one of the working girls, and one of them shows up. It's not Sydney Sweeney. She says stuff like, oh, do you want a BJ from an award-winning actress? Very much like Laura Palmer does in Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me when she's like, oh, you want to sleep with the homecoming queen? You know? I recall earlier the hint about the sex trafficking that you see all over the zines. Now he asks her, like, hey, who is that pirate guy in the limo? But she just says he was anonymous. So she gets a slice of pizza, cheese pizza, mind you. Again, like, you know, kind of like the pizzas found at the gates, if you know what I'm saying. And sees Sarah's photo and says she knows her. She's like, yeah, she was in a glass cube, Saturn symbolism, at some performance art party wearing a Dalmatian fur bathing suit. Dalmatian, again with the dogs. Women are the dogs. And old men would, like, tap on the glass of this cube, right? The elites. And she went with a producer who hired her and some girls to go party with him. Again, with the trafficking stuff, she says the party was on a block. It was like the Gatsby's. It was the biggest house on the block. It was off limits. This one house was off limits. It was some songwriter's place, right? So keep this in the back pocket. We have this rich songwriter mansion house party, girls performing in cubes with old dirty men and all this stuff. Now it's a new day, and this has got to be eviction day, right? Sam's playing the Jesus and the Brides of Dracula song, Turning Teeth, and he starts to decode the lyrics and the numbers of the letters and each word. We're going to unpack all of this in the conclusion. And you'll notice on the wall, again, Hitchcock's Rear Window, which is kind of what Sam is emulating when he's on his porch, kind of looking around with his binoculars, starring Grace Kelly and James Stewart. We saw Grace Kelly's mask at the zine author's house, right? Also, the ankle hair length is ridiculous on Andrew Garfield. What are we doing, brother? So anyway, he's decoding this whole track by bumping up the numbers on one song and choosing letters from another song to come up with a code. And the code he comes up with is rub Dean's head and wait under Newton. Right? And he's like, James Dean's head? And he realizes there's a bust of James Dean's head at the Griffith Observatory. So he goes to the statue, he rubs James Dean's, he goes up there, rubs the head, goes to the statue of Isaac Newton and waits and waits. And then it happens. A homeless appearing man in a crown who calls himself the Homeless King shows up, tosses him a cloth, a blindfold, and tells him it'll take him where he wants to go. It's giving King Arthur vibes a little bit here, all right? So Sam is led with the blindfold on by this king through Hollywood to a cave that has a door with a code. There's all kinds of Freemasonic initiation elements here, right? The initiate blinded by the darkness of the hoodwink with the first degree of entered apprentice. He's ignorant to the truth. He's ignorant to the wisdom of Sophia. And they take him underground. They take him into the caves where the mysteries are, right? This is like the cult of Mithras. They had all these temples and caves and this symbolic of going into the subconscious of the human mind. And he enters with the key. This is the lost word of Freemasonry. And the next step in the ritual is to remove the hoodwink where the initiate's eyes are now opened. And he is now obtaining the wisdom. No longer ignorant. So the homeless king says, look, everything belongs to the coyotes and they're these amazing creatures. And if you find one, you should follow it to see where it leads you. All right. Again, coyotes and dogs, big deal in the film. the two species are related, the coyotes and the dogs, right? The coyotes are like kind of the undomesticated wild version of dogs. So the homeless king takes off Sam's blindfold and leaves him to continue his journey alone and closes the door to the cave. So Sam continues to delve deeper into this cave. This is the subconscious. And he ends up finding an entrance, or an exit, I should say, that, or an entrance that has the all-seeing eye of Horus above it. Goes through the door and ends up in a sterile room with drywall and some sparse furniture. And he's like, oh, it's a bomb shelter. Crawls up a passage towards the light, ends up opening a grate into a refrigerated room. He ends up in the back of a grocery store dairy department. This is, of course, showing us all these underground passages and connections beneath Hollywood. Okay. You've got the realm above, the realm below. As above, so below. So now he's walking back home, walks past the zine author's house, 1492, remember? Police are there, and they're like, oh, yeah, this guy, he, you know, did himself in. And Sam's like, I know this guy. He wouldn't have done that. But the cop says, yeah, no, there was something wrong with this guy. His house was full of weird stuff and weird faces and all this stuff. Now, this, again, reminds me of our MK Ultra deep dive. This is the assassination techniques. They try to make it look like a self-harm situation. I believe we discussed this in part two, right? When we talked about the assassination manuals. So the cops leave. Sam breaks into the house because he recalls the author saying that he was worried someone was going to take him out. And he had surveillance cameras set up. So Sam sneaks into the little hidden surveillance room, rewinds the footage, finds a creepy naked owl woman walking in the house. So he snags the cereal box map that we talked about earlier, calls Alan. It's like, hey, can you hook me up with Jesus and the Dracula Brides? Alan takes Sam to one of Jesus's parties. Guess what? It's a chess party. Again, more Freemasonic symbolism, right? And it'll play out even more, but you already know it's go with the Bobs. It's opposing polarities and all this stuff. But Sam's there because he wants to talk to Jesus. So Sam violently crashes in on Jesus taking a dump and hits him and demands he tell him what the code is in turning teeth. But he has no idea, and Jesus is like, oh, the record label forced me to sing these lyrics, okay?
Why'd you put a code in the song?
What are you talking about?
What are the tunnels for?
What? Why are you hitting me?
Your song, Turning Teeth, there's a fucking code in it. I need to know why you put it in there and what the fuck it means.
Help.
Tell me. I don't know anything about a code. How could you not know? You wrote the song.
No, I didn't. I wrote most of them, but not that one.
Well, honestly, the label gave me a few songs to record, and the rest are all mine. So which songs did they give you?
Turning Teeth, Wire Mountain, and Waltz of the Christian Chip Farmers.
That's all the hits?
Stories to belittle me, man.
All right, so who wrote the song?
They were delivered anonymously. I got a call from someone at the label. They said not to ask any questions, but if I didn't record the songs, I'd lose my contract.
You're telling me you don't know who wrote your own hit song?
He didn't give a name, no. He just said it was an important piece of music by the songwriter.
The songwriter?
Yeah, the songwriter.
Now, he says that the songwriter gave him the lyrics. The same songwriter who owned the crazy Gatsby party house that the working girls were told they couldn't go to that house. All right. Obviously, all of this a reference to the music industry controlling artists. And I saw a lot of video that made a lot of sense of what's going on in the music industry, that like the reason why Britney Spears shaved her head and Kanye sang all this racist stuff. It's because these artists, they're lashing out against their handlers and their controllers. Right. So they could purposefully not be popular anymore so they can take a break, right? Because with all that fame and popularity comes more work and more servitude. So it kind of makes sense that these artists are like, dude, I don't want to do this no more. I'm going to make myself so unsavory and so unlikable and so unattractive that people just leave me alone because they're on contract. Like they've already signed the deal. So Jesus alludes that the mystery goes to the songwriter's house, and that is where things become crazy. And we're going to pause right here. This is the end of part one of my analysis. Okay. I'm going to continue my research for part two, because the problem is I've got to read this book by Peter Lavenda, this Stairway to Heaven book, to try to sort of make sense of the theories of what I believe is happening in part two, right? So I'm going to furiously work to try to get that out as soon as I can. It might be a week from now. But part two is where we're going to get into the most interesting revelations of the film, because we ain't talked about nothing yet, all right? We're going to continue with part two, where Sam goes to the songwriter's house. We find out the music industry is planting messages in all the songs. We're going to get through the rest of the film, and we're going to have this big old mega in conclusion section where I'm going to decode everything and give you my super red hot interpretation of what's really going on here, because I think I really cracked the code, and it relates to Osiris and Sirius and the ascent rituals of the Egyptian Book of the Dead. As always, if you like the show, be sure to subscribe where, whatever app, whatever podcast. Please subscribe to the YouTube at Occult Symbolism. And if you're new to all this, if you don't know who I am, you can start with the basics. Go to my website, IlluminatiWatcher.com. Up top, it'll say free book on the menu. Put your name on my email list. I own it. I don't sell that to nobody. And I will send you an email to download my first book as a PDF for free. It explains the basics of what all this is about. I've written 9 books. That was my first book. And I'll give it, it's a very normie take from 2012. All right. I'm going to email it to you for free. So if you want to like dig into that while you're waiting for me to get part two, please do that. But most importantly, till next time, stay positive.